I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're talking about how to create great schools. We will discuss the findings of a new education initiative called What's Possible, a sweeping community conversation about education in general, and the Indianapolis public schools in particular. The initiative reached out to thousands of people and asked them to help define and shape education policy. We will talk about how people responded with a great group of guests: Indianapolis Deputy Mayor of Education Jason Cloth, John Aldhart of IPS, and Kariga Rausch of Stand for Children. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the results of an Indianapolis Community Education Survey, What's Possible. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today, we've got a great group of guests, are Jason Cloth, who is the Deputy Mayor of Education for the City of Indianapolis. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me today.
It is good to have you here. John Aldhart, who is with Indianapolis Public Schools. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have you here. And Kariga Rausch, who is with Stand for Children and is fighting a bit of a cold. How are you doing, Kariga?
Been better, but we're doing okay, John.
Okay,
thank you
well,
for the opportunity.
We appreciate you being here. Well, I want to start, I guess, and I'll throw this question first to Jason Cloth, and just ask, what's possible? What's the initiative? What's the genesis of it?
Sure. So several months ago, the Mind Trust, a local nonprofit focused on education reform in our city, published a report called Opportunity Schools that basically proposed an alternative structure for our largest school district, Indianapolis Public Schools. IPS then came out with a response, and in that response, Dr. White asked that the mayor facilitate a series of community conversations to really get the input of our community around what we aspire for our schools to be. And so we then went about the process of convening a group of community partners to plan these conversations, including the NAACP, the Urban League, La Plaza, the Mind Trust, UNCF, Stand for Children, the United Way, and IPS, to basically plan every element of what this outreach would look like. We agreed to a set of common principles at the outset, so providing multiple opportunities for people to give feedback, including perspectives from a broad base of people. We wanted it to be inclusive of all IPS stakeholders, and we wanted it to be balanced, transparent, and fair. And so we agreed to a set of central questions that we would ask. First, what is a great school, and how do we ensure all schools are great for all children? Secondly, how can we ensure all children in the IPS area have access to a high-quality preschool program? And third, how can we ensure all neighborhoods have equal access to great schools that meet student and community needs? And so now that we've brought this process to a close, we've had more than 35 neighborhood town hall meetings and youth forums. We've knocked on more than 5,000 doors, made nearly 50,000 phone calls, had a radio town hall on the Amos Brown show, created a website, and have had to date about 7,300 responses from members of our community.
What is that website? What's the URL?
It's What's Possible.
What'sPossibleIndy.com. Okay. Where coincidentally, readers can also get a copy of the full report, and we'd encourage folks to actually read the full report.
As well as the executive summary, yes. Yes.
And so we've been thrilled just at the range of perspectives that we've heard from all across Indianapolis. And so this report really reflects the findings of our community.
And I'll go next to John Aldhart. Obviously, it sounds like the way this thing rolled out was there were a couple of dueling reports from Mind Trust and IPS, And at that point, Eugene White, who's the superintendent of Indianapolis Public Schools, asked the mayor to be kind of a community-wide facilitator. What was the motivation behind that and trying to facilitate this kind of conversation?
Well, I think when we looked at both reports from the Mine Trust and then even in our own IPS response, it became apparent that there was one very important segment of our community who really had not weighed in on either one, and that was our community. And so it was imperative at that point that we find out, well, what does our community think? Mm-hmm. What are their priorities? What are their aspirations for our children? And so Dr. White took an unprecedented step of saying, community, here we are. Mm-hmm. What do you think? How can we improve? What is it that we're doing right that we could expand on? Mm-hmm. What are some new things that the Mine Trust or that IPS have not considered in the discussion? And the way to do that was to do something that only an involved and invested mayor could do. And that was to say, we need to create a process where as many people as possible have an opportunity to share their ideas in a framework that will benefit our entire community. And I think we've been able to do that.
What did you hope to get out of this conversation, John Oldhart, this process? What?
I think there were several goals.
Okay.
But I think the most important was to say to our community, from the Indianapolis Public Schools perspective, and although I would not speak for Mayor Ballard, I assume that this is important to them also, mm-hmm. and that is that we do listen. Mm-hmm. That we do want to know what the community thinks, that we recognize that we cannot truly be successful if we're not all going in the same direction. And I think it was very important to say to our community, you're valued, your input is valued. We need to come together as this community has done mm-hmm. for the last three decades that I've been here and see what we can do together, because I don't believe any issue is bigger than our community when we come together.
We are talking about the results of an Indianapolis Community Education Survey. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'd urge you to do that if you do care about great schools in Indianapolis. Kariga Rausch, how did you get pulled into this process then? I understand here we had, how the mayor's office got into it. Where did you enter the discussion?
Great, and thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. So we were one of the other seven community organizations mm-hmm. that the mayor's office and Dr. White pulled together to have a broad and diverse coalition of people that had the people power mm-hmm. to really engage in the vast outreach efforts that Deputy Mayor Cloth indicated with the phone calls and going door to door and facilitating the small group conversations. So Stanford Children was thrilled to be a part and to play a role as being one of those seven other community organizations that came together to help pull this unprecedented outreach opportunity off.
Jason Cloth.
You know, I think the thing that I would add to this and one of the things that I think makes this so unique, not only in terms of the outreach that's mm-hmm. happened here in Indianapolis, but the degree of outreach that's happened here relative to other efforts around the country, is that you have two very different points of view and perspectives on the future of our school system. And yet both those parties were willing to come together and have an honest and frank conversation about what we aspire to. And I just think that that is something incredibly unique and just speaks to the character of the people involved in our broader community.
Well, and was that one of the goals? I mean, we have seen, let's face it, for at least the past 30 years, to some degree, education has been either a tug of war, you can pick your metaphor to some degree on it, or, you know, the one I use is you've got two sides sort of lobbing shells at each other with a lot of kids trapped in the middle where the shells are falling. Was there a desire basically to try to break through that dynamic and see if we can get to something that's a little more productive? John Oldhart, you were wincing a little bit when I was going metaphorical there.
Well, I think it's so easy for us, and it's convenient to to find out what we disagree on.
Mm-hmm.
I think the heavy lifting comes when we work hard to see what we can agree on. And what we rediscovered is that we all care about the future of our children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where all of us must maintain our focus. We may have different ideas on how to get there, but at the end of the day, the question has to be, is this really what is in the best interest of our children? So if we've been playing tug of war, if we have done that, has it been in the best interest of children? Because there might be times when that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But again, at the end of the day, can we, when we lay our heads down and try to get some rest, can we say that today, yes, we did what was absolutely in the best interest of our children? And I think this group really held on to that. And I think the deputy mayor was right that there were a lot of different opinions, not just from the Mine Trust, not just from the Indianapolis Public Schools. It was more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was very important that we allow the community to say, these are the areas that we think are most important and at the end of that day are in the best interest of our children.
And I want to talk a little bit about what the report, more than a little bit about what the report did find, but I got a couple of questions for Jason Cloth going forward, just kind of procedural ones. In terms of selecting those seven groups that were part of it, how did you arrive at A, the number seven, and B, that those would be the groups that would be part of driving this?
Well, the first two groups were pretty clear, being IPS and the Mine Trust. And then from there, I thought, our office is primarily responsible for authorizing 22 of the mayor-sponsored charter schools. And so then thought, we'll bring Stanford Children into this process because this really is what they are equipped to do as an advocacy organization. Mm-hmm. And then I just really wanted to make sure that the group was inclusive of a wide range of perspectives. And so, John mentioned other points of view. The NAACP had actually come out with an alternate plan, and so wanted to reach out to them. And that was really the process and the thinking that went into bringing the group together. I should also note that we had more than 75 other organizations that endorsed the need for this conversation across the city. So our outreach efforts were intended to be as inclusive as possible.
Well, and then the other thing is we talked about the defining the stakeholders. How did we define stakeholders in the Indianapolis Public Schools?
Sure. So I think one of the mistakes that we often make is that we tend to think of the stakeholders of our schools as only those who have children attending those schools. Mm-hmm. And in reality, our school system affects the health of our neighborhoods and the economic and social vitality of our city. So really, the stakeholders as defined in this effort were anyone living within the boundaries of IPS or our broader city, so to speak.
Well, Kariga Rausch, I'm going to ask you, what did you hope in terms of assuming a leadership role in this process? What did you hope would come out of it?
Well, there is no way that we can achieve transformational, scalable, and sustainable change if we don't have active participation among folks in our community. And this was an unprecedented effort to really listen well to what our community's priorities are for our schools. And that's why we are so thrilled that, a broad diversity of people participated in this from a race ethnicity perspective to a group affiliation perspective. We had more than 70% of people who participated in this were either parents or grandparents who were raising children, especially those grandparents raising children. It's a growing population of people in our community. And so we're thrilled that about 22% of people who participated were in that kind of bucket of people. Also, as folks go to the website, again, www.whatspossibleindy, thank you very much, www.whatspossibleindy.com to read the full report, you'll notice that we have a map on page 11 of the full report that literally has dots for where everybody participated. And we're really thrilled that the vast majority of those have a resonance within IPS. So we feel like we did a great job as a nine organization collective of listening really well to where people were coming from.
Was there a model for doing this? Had another community done this that anyone's aware of? Jason Cloth.
Not to my knowledge. The planning committee spent more than 100 hours working on ironing out every element of this, down to where the meetings would be held, what the flyers advertising the meetings look like, to the specific interview or scripts that the facilitators would use. So, you know, we really made it up as we went.
And if I can just add real quickly, because these two gentlemen too, that are here won't toot their own horn, but Mayor Ballard, Dr. White, Jason, and John deserve an awful lot of credit for going after something this unprecedented, as was indicated before. For a mayor to say we want to listen really well, and for a big city urban school district to be as open and transparent as they have been in saying we want to listen really well to what the community thinks, that was great.
As we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krull, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about what's possible, the results of an Indianapolis Community Education Survey. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Jackie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Oh, my question was, in the course of all this conversation, did they identify any models of successful schools operating in the city, and did those people come to the table for these discussions?
Good question. We'll take it up. Thank you very much for the call, Jackie. Well, I'll throw that open to the panel. I guess I'll start with Jason Cloth. Was that one of the things that you looked for, is some places where it is perceived to be working, and seeing if the model is portable?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we found was that irrespective of the type of school, whether that be a traditional public school or a public charter school like those that the mayor oversees, or private schools. I mean, we have some phenomenal private schools in the city of Indianapolis. The Oaks Academy is one that comes immediately to mind. That are doing just a phenomenal job of serving our children and our broader community. And so really what we wanted to get at was what is true of all of those different types of mm-hmm. schools that causes them to be high quality. And so that was in our initial question around grade schools, one of the central things that we were trying to tease out.
Well, and I'll reframe that a little bit. I mean, in terms of, and perhaps this is a good way to segue into what the report did find, was there or were there areas of agreement that, you know, define what is a great school? I'll go with Kariga Rausch on that one.
We think so. We think that our community expressed a number of different priorities that they think are important for great schools that we believe is pretty robust across the 7,000 or so people that we heard from. Things like having a really strong culture and environment, making sure that we've got responsible, equipped, and active parents that are valued by the community, making sure that we have caring and effective principals and teachers, having a robust set of programs and services that meet student and community needs, a large conversation around school-level decision-making authority and making sure that principals and teachers have the appropriate authority to do what's necessary on behalf of kids, accountability for meaningful student outcomes, a lot of conversation about what the purpose of schools are and making sure that we're educating kids to a high standard for whatever is next, and a school evaluation system that takes into account multiple indicators of success, that looks at culture and climate, looks at a lot of additional things in addition to test scores.
John Althart, is there, coming out of this survey, were there things that you at IPS can use immediately?
Well, absolutely. First of all, it provides us with a tremendous resource to look at. In some respects, it affirms what we're currently doing in our schools. It allows us to say to our teachers and to our administrators, this is what the community expects from us. We also understand that this community put a high value on preschool. And it's an initiative that we've been working on at IPS now for several years. And Dr. White just has recently begun the public discussion and how that will look when we implement the first phase of preschool in the 2013-2014 school year. This report shows across the board, and I think it is among those issues that we all agree upon, that this community believes in the value of quality preschool. We don't have it yet, but we're now taking that first step. So it reaffirms that initiative that IPS is taking, and we're hoping that then as we need to expand it so we include all of our four-year-old children, that we can use this, the weight and the value of this report as we go and we talk to community partners that we need in order to make this a truly comprehensive community-wide quality preschool effort. So those are just a few of the examples of how this report will add immediate value to the Indianapolis Public Schools. Also, I think there is all kinds of untapped opportunity that lies in the pages of this report and the people who contributed to it. I don't think we can lose the fact that we have great resources in our community that maybe we weren't aware of before this process started.
People have bought into it. Jason Cloth and Kariga Roush, you are both shaking your heads. But shaking your head is not an effective communication tactic on radio, so I need one of you to speak at this moment.
Well, I think for the mayor's office, it affirmed some of the work that we're doing specifically as it pertains to accountability for student outcomes and performance and school-level decision-making authority and the autonomy that our principals have. You know, I would echo John. I was so excited to see that IPS is taking the first steps around providing high-quality preschool for students, not only in IPS, but working alongside other community organizations in that effort. In part coming out of this conversation. It was interesting. I mean, we asked the community, how should we pay for this? And we gave them three options. The first option was that IPS levy a tax increase to do that. About 44% of the community was willing to support that effort. 65% of residents felt that IPS should find it within its existing resources, which is the first step that Dr. White has made. And then 80% or 79% of the community felt that, the state should be funding that, funding this effort. We're one of 11 states that does not. I think our partnership with IPS and with others to help move this forward is an important one.
We are talking about the results of an Indianapolis Community Education Survey here on No Limits with my guest, Jason Cloth, who is Deputy Mayor of Education for Indianapolis, John Oldhart of IPS, and Kariga Roush, who is with Stand for Children. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, it sounds like, this is the skeptic, the trained skeptic talking. Journalists are trained to be somewhat skeptical. But many of the things, these results at least, sound okay. Ideally, we want schools where we demand excellence. We want parents to care. We want teachers to be well prepared. We want the students to be well prepared. We want the community to be supportive. People probably would have said the same thing 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago. The difficulty has always been the how of how we get there. Is there anything in this report that tells you how we should do all of these things? Or is that where, as John Oldhart said earlier, that's where the heavy lifting comes into play and that we've got to figure out how we arrive at these areas of agreement? I'll take it back to you, John.
Well, my hope would be that we were able to introduce a large segment of our population to public education. The very successful positive elements of public education as it specifically relates to the Indianapolis Public Schools, but also where are areas that we know we need to improve. My hope is that all of these folks who participated either directly in the conferences, in the forums, or filled out the survey, went online, talked on the phone, filled out forms, that now we can take that next step, that heavy lifting part. And these folks will come to our schools, mm-hmm. that they will volunteer to read to our kindergartners, our mm-hmm. first and second graders, that they'll come and find a role to play to support our teachers, to help what they're doing in the classroom be more effective, that we all understand and have a greater appreciation, as the deputy mayor said, that regardless of whether or not we have children, we have a stake in our children's future. And what is that role mm-hmm. for us to play? And I believe there's ample opportunity mm-hmm. within this report that everyone can find a role to play to help improve public education in our community. And that's not limited to the Indianapolis public schools. My children attend Warren Township schools. Mm-hmm. It applies to Warren Township. It applies to how our community has to come to an understanding where we have a community value for education, and we all understand that we have a role to play, and we're willing to get in there and to do that heavy lifting.
You were shaking your head a little bit when I was saying we would have agreed on these goals over years. Is there something new about these findings? Is it simply the recognition that it is going to take an entire community to educate children, or what was it that caused you to react?
Well, I think that we see in our Indianapolis public schools that mm-hmm. Some of our schools that continue to struggle, mm-hmm. where our children are not achieving to the level that we know they are capable of achieving, that it's not a coincidence that these children and these schools are in areas where we have the highest crime rates in our community, where we have the largest percentage of single-parent households, that these are areas that have struggled economically for a long period of time. And again, I take it back to that's what gives me the reassurance that we as a community, because we've done it before, mm-hmm. can come together. But it's not something that's going to be addressed by just the Indianapolis Public Schools or just the mayor's office or just for a great advocacy organization like Stand for Children. It's got to be a community-wide effort. And I think as we look at thriving neighborhoods, the connection between education and neighborhoods, and we look at how we engage partnerships and how we use those resources is critical if we really truly are going to give every child an opportunity to reach his or her potential.
We are talking Krieger Rausch, yes, please.
So I do think there are couldn't agree more with everything that that both John and Jason have said up until this point. I would say that there is a lot of new information in this report too, mm-hmm. and that's why again we encourage readers to go to the website and actually read the full report because there's a lot of important nuance and details associated with this. I mean, on any kind of medium like mm-hmm. this, you know, we're able to give the kind of high level high talking point. Right mm-hmm. around kind of what's in the report, but there's some important nuance associated with this. Let me give you just one very quick example.
Yeah,
so there's broad agreement that expanded pre-K is important. There's also broad agreement that we need some common expectations for health and safety and outcome requirements mm-hmm. for pre-Kers kind of entering kindergarten. But what's really interesting is our community also said, though, but be careful not to standardize pre-K. Right. They said we want to make sure that kids continue to have that joy of learning. Right. That love of learning. So create some common outcome expectations for kids, but don't standardize it so much that we let kids lose that wonder associated with pre-K. So, again, I would encourage your readers to go to our website, www.whatspossibleindy.com, and please to read the full report.
Yes, we are talking about the results of an Indianapolis Community Education Survey here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Your question, please.
Yes. Well, I'm an IPS parent, and I have been, I work with a lot of teachers as a professor. I'm wondering, it seems to me one of the biggest obstacles to educational change is the standardization that's being imposed on schools by the testing movement. And particularly in IPS, I've seen a lot of top-down control of schools and teachers. And I haven't read the report yet, but I'm wondering if it addresses this issue.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Steve. Well, and that actually is a question I'd sort of anticipated, and it picks up on what, Kariga was also saying before we took Steve's call, which we don't want to lose. We want to measure outcomes, but we also don't want children to lose the wonder of learning. How are we negotiating that? And in speaking of that, is there anything in the report that suggests that we ought to have a different kind of bureaucratic structure for IPS? I'll start with John Oldhart on that and then go to Jason Clove.
Well, certainly we've seen a lot of different observations and opinions on how individual schools should operate. And we know, being educators, that a lot of what is perceived as top-down truly is, but it's actually coming from state mandates that we are required to follow. And so, you know, we want our teachers to teach. Mm-hmm. We want our children to have the best opportunity to learn. And we understand that it's not a one-size-fits-all mm-hmm. Proposition. I think one of the things that we are pleased with in IPS is that, you know, we operate really truly one of the broadest range of magnet choices and innovative options for our families and our children in the state. Before I came here, I was at our Gambold Prep High mm-hmm. School. It's out on the west side, and it has its first class. It's a freshman school this year. We'll add another class next year, and we'll have a fully functioning high school in 4 years. But the kids there are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a couple of those kids today said they probably wouldn't have stayed in IPS had they not had the opportunity to come to this particular school that offers them a rigorous, very challenging type of learning environment. And so I think we have to be flexible. We have to be willing to look at the way children learn and understand that it isn't like it was 30 or 40 years ago, that one size doesn't fit all, and that we have to have the flexibility and we have to have those options so that our children are placed in the best environment, as Kariga mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. to learn. Because at the end of the day, we want all of our students to reach his or her full potential.
Jason Cloth, Steve's question really was about whether there was going to be less sort of oversight and allow teachers more autonomy in IPS.
Yeah. So there were a lot of community concerns and questions expressed around how standardized tests are used in our public school system. I think it's important that we remember that these tests and the results are meant to inform and provide practitioners, teachers, and school administrators with information that can guide their instruction, and intended to provide parents with information around how their schools are performing so that they can make the best choices possible for their children. I do think we've seen some unintended consequences as a result of standardized testing, teachers teaching to the test, situations with cheating in places like Atlanta and elsewhere. We want to make sure that we're teaching to higher order thinking, and then the tests will take care of themselves.
We're talking about the results of a community education survey here on No Limits. And as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. I'm going to ask real quickly, was there one thing that, and I'll go with Kariga Rausch, that really surprised you coming out of this survey that you thought, wow, I would have expected that?
I don't know if there was anything that was I would categorize as a huge surprise, but one thing that resonated with me, probably the most among all the other findings, was residents' desire to have outstanding schools in every neighborhood here in Indianapolis and in IPS. That was a big finding. Lots of great schools in lots of places around the community, but great schools in every neighborhood was a huge theme.
We are talking about education in Indianapolis with Jason Cloke, John Oldhart, and Kariga Rausch. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about education in Indianapolis, but in some ways also in general. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email from a listener named Virginia who says, I am happy to hear that community organizations were involved in the discussion. My first question, was there a discussion of the move toward increased testing from state exams that include ISTEP and Acuity, for example? Based on my experience working in schools and with students in community organizations, that it has not led, in my estimation, to better quality education or increasing the graduation rate. If anything, just the opposite. Did the committee address students' deficiencies in academics that are not being addressed by giving more tests? For example, students who are 2 to 3 years below grade level. As an educator, what I am seeing is a push for teaching to the test while ignoring students' academic development. Jason Cloth, was that one of the issues that...
Yeah, there was certainly some feedback around this, and I think I would reiterate my comments from before. I think that there have been some unintended consequences of teachers teaching to standardized tests explicitly. There have been some instances of cheating and other occurrences around the country. And yet, I think it's important to remember that having some data back informs the practice of teachers and it informs the practice of school administrators, and it gives us the ability to disaggregate information so we can see what schools are performing well, what schools may be performing less well, and we need to pay more attention to as a community. It helps us to see differences that then cause us to target and focus in specific areas that I think is useful. So I think standardized tests certainly have a place, but they have a clearly defined place, and we need to ensure that we're teaching to higher order thinking for our kids.
We're talking about education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Donna, welcome to the program. Donna?
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Certainly.
My question is for all the participants related to the state's report card that came out yesterday on the schools. And I guess my question may be a couple of parts. First is a statement, which is a lot of schools within the IPS school system received failing grades, received Fs. And sort of the participants' thoughts on the logic of placing our youngest learners in preschool in a school system that appears to be not performing very well.
I'll start that one with John Althart.
Well, certainly, when the report card system came out, it was another tool, as the deputy mayor suggested, that we can evaluate how our schools are doing. And just like it was when all of us were in school, nobody wanted to come home with a D or an F on their report card. We certainly believe that all of our schools, all of our students are capable of being A-plus schools. So the schools that did not reach their full potential, as the deputy mayor indicated, those schools can be identified. They can get the resources from within the IPS district, from our outside partners, from the state, to make sure that those children have every opportunity to reach their full potential. I think, again, it is that feedback that is necessary for us to have in order to assure, one, to identify those schools that are doing well, and I would say many of our IPS schools scored very well. Many of our schools have shown tremendous progress. Some schools that were F schools a year ago have been able to, through hard work on the part of the students, our families, our teachers, our administration, to move those grades from a year ago that were Fs and Ds up to Bs and As. So we have a model that we know can work, and we know those elements and those characteristics of those schools that have been successful either through progress or have been consistently good, like our Cider Academy, for example, that has consistently been one of the top schools in the state. We have excellent role models, and we know that none of our students are failures. All of our students have great potential. We need to make sure that, our teachers have the resources they need and that our students have the supports they need in order to reach their potential. So I believe we have those resources in our community, but none of our students, our kids, are failures. And we need to work harder to make sure they have the success that so many within the Indianapolis Public Schools District are having.
Jason Cloth.
Sure. Well, with regards to your question about providing preschool for students in a system that, at least on the basis of the letter grades, would suggest are underperforming. But the reality is that 45% of children in lower income communities aren't coming to school prepared with the necessary skills required. They can't recognize all the letters in the alphabet, use scissors, recognize basic shapes. And so they're starting behind from day one when they enter school. And so I think it's important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. We need to be making progress on both fronts. We need to be improving the quality of our schools, whether that be schools within IPS or other townships, and taking a hard look at the schools that we authorize in the mayor's office. But we also need to be making advances in pre-K. And I don't think we should wait indefinitely to solve the problem of our K-12 system before we start to look at what we're doing with early childhood education.
Well, and to clarify, too, it's the three of you didn't sit down and just decide we should invest more in pre-K. That came from the survey results. That came from the people you asked what's important to you about education.
That's exactly right.
Yes. And Donna, did you have another question?
No, I didn't. That's perfect. Thanks.
Great.
And thanks for your topic today. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you very much. Yes, John Oldhart.
Well, and I think, too, that there should be some reassurance that we know when IPS faced, when our community faced a similar situation 6 or 7 years ago, where there was widespread agreement in the community that we needed full-day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. But the adults couldn't figure out how to make that happen for the kids. And finally, Dr. White said, we can't wait any longer. We'll figure a way within the Indianapolis Public Schools District, even though we have declining budgets, we'll figure a way because we know our children have to have it. Well, here we are 6 years later, and the same community conversation is, we need preschool. We need quality preschool. That's something that all the community partners agreed. That was reaffirmed time and time again in our community conversations. And so we're starting that path now. And we hope, as occurred with full-day kindergarten, that once IPS takes that first step, we know we've got a great community. We've seen it through the community conversations and the What's Possible initiative. We know that we will get that support, so we're able to not only serve 1,400 or so children that we'll be able to serve in the first year, but that we will be able to develop a program in the next 2 or 3 years that will serve the estimated 3,000 four-year-olds that we think are within our system that need to have that quality preschool experience so they are ready for kindergarten, so they are better prepared for first grade. And so by the time they take their initial reading tests at third grade, these kids are not only meeting expectations, they're blowing them out of the water because we know our kids can do it.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Julie who says, a proven part of a student's success is an active involvement of parents. What does the study provide in ways of encouraging parent involvement? I'll go with Kariga Rausch on that one.
And so it was interesting. Two very strong themes around parents came out of the community conversations. The first was parents are a child's first and best teacher and need to be valued as such. That there can be no demonizing of parents and no talking negatively about parents. Because if you start from that perspective, you're going to get a negative reaction. You need to start with the understanding that parents are a child's first and best teacher. At the same time, there was an equally strong theme that parents need to take responsibility for making sure that kids have what they need. And in some particular ways that the report demonstrates. And one, I think, important themes that came out within that around parent involvement was, again, again, this idea that parent involvement can be a lot easier if you've got outstanding schools in neighborhoods that kids choose to go to. It's something we haven't talked a lot about as of yet, but something that came across as a really important theme that most parents said, you know, having choices is good, having new magnet schools, having new public charter schools, having, you know, options for kids that can meet their unique needs is generally a good thing. What is far better is to have outstanding schools of any type in neighborhoods that kids choose to attend. We had one very astute parent that said, you know, I'm grateful that I can get, you know, my kid to a great school that's being bused across town. And thankfully, IPS has that option, you know, for kids. Mm-hmm. But it'd be infinitely better if that great school option and that great school program were right here in my neighborhood. I don't have reliable transportation, so I'm grateful that my kid can get there, but I can't, right? And so there was a large conversation in the community conversations about having outstanding schools in neighborhoods of any type that neighborhood kids choose to attend. That'll address parent involvement, that can help address school morale, and that can help build neighborhoods and neighborhood health.
Well, and that's the part I think this conversation needs to go to now, which is, you know, it sounds to me like there's pretty broad agreement on what the goals are here from all of you. But as John Oldhart identified, the place where it gets tough is figuring out the how. So out of this study right now, and I'm going to take it around the horn, I'll start with Jason Kloth. What is a good first step, a practical first step that we can do with this that makes it not just a report that ends up, you know, being archived somewhere and referenced on the 10th, 20th, 30th anniversary?
Yeah, so I think, you know, two important first steps are already happening. First, I think, you know, IPS at least moving in the direction of providing pre-K for some segment of its students. I think secondly, strengthening the relationships and partnerships amongst groups. It was fascinating for me to sit down with all the members of the planning committee and really work collaboratively and talk through the hard issues with a set of common principles in mind, and in keeping in mind that everyone wants what's best for our kids. In terms of how this is going to inform the mayor's work, I think it reaffirms something that I believe very strongly, which is there is a clear intersection between the quality of our public schools, the health of our neighborhoods, and the economic vitality and social vitality of the city. You know, 83% of respondents to the questionnaire felt that the quality of the schools in their neighborhood was critical to where they choose to live. Since the 1950s in our city, we've lost about 200,000 residents from our urban core. And when you look at the shift in population and the ages reflected, we're losing population between the ages of 1 and 19 and 35 and older, so families with school-age children. And when you look at the income levels reflected in that shift in population, we're losing families that are making between $50,000 and $150,000 a year, and they take their tax revenue with them. And so from the vantage point of a city, we need to be sure that we're creating academically rigorous, racially and socioeconomically diverse schools. And then we look what's within our locus of control to do that. And so, you know, we, from our end, are looking to authorize schools where they have the autonomy to make decisions, but accountability for results, that we're focusing on creating a supply of human capital at both the teacher and principal level, that we're providing supports for school students and families, and that we're evaluating our progress over time to make sure that we're putting our resources in the right place so that we do have, as Kariga said, high-quality schools in every neighborhood that meet the needs of every kid.
Kariga Rausch, what's a good practical first step coming out of this?
So one of the, I think, important things that the planning partners have suggested that we are interested in doing is doing what I'll call an assessment. A lot of the by and reporting back to the community in March of next year. So the themes that are a part of the What's Possible initiative aren't necessarily things that our schools are doing terrific or things that they're doing terribly at. We need to take a look at where there are areas that we're struggling so that we can devote more resources there, and areas that we're doing doing really well that we can replicate in other places. So I think that's a very important tangible next step. The planning partners are also committed to continuing to meet to the degree feasible and possible to work through a lot of the hard stuff, as you indicated, of how we actually realize what's possible. Because our community, I don't want to minimize the importance of listening well and spending the last 3 months truly engaging our community to hear our community's wisdom around what they want and what we all want our schools to be. The really hard part in this multi-step effort is now realizing what's possible. We're committed to making that happen.
How we make it possible. John Althart, what's a good practical first step, would you say?
Well, I think certainly the listening part had to happen first. We had to take that foundational step. I think what we see is that today we're educating children in our community. We'll be educating children in our community tomorrow. So we have to, and we can't stop doing that to say, how can we take all these great ideas and implement them to make our schools better today? So we're going to have to take that process and take those best practices to continue to listen. We can't stop listening because the formal part of this is done. And I hope that what it shares with not only our school district and with our community, but with other school districts, is that you never stop listening. And it's incumbent upon us to make sure we create that kind of environment, that welcoming environment that says your ideas are welcome here. And so I think we need to continue that listening. But obviously, starting preschool is huge for us. I think it is listening and being open to different ways of achieving that goal at the end of the day, what's best for our children. And I think as long as we keep focused on that, we can take as many different ideas and as many opinions as there are and figure out a way to help our children achieve their full potential.
In about 15 seconds for each of you, what will define success for all of this work? I mean, obviously, there's been a tremendous amount of effort thrown at this. What will make this a success? I'll start with John Althart first and then go on around.
That we lose sight that children come first. We must continue to make sure that our children come first and that we, in every decision we make, that is our primary goal, that children come first.
Kariga Rausch.
That 100% of children have access to a high-quality school in their neighborhood.
Okay, and Jason Cloth.
A high-quality seat for every child in every neighborhood in Indianapolis.
This has been a fascinating conversation, and I really want to thank you all for joining me. My guests today have been Jason Cloth, who is the Deputy Mayor of Education for the City of Indianapolis. Jason, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Certainly. John Althart with IPS. John, thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
And certainly, and Kariga Rausch, who is with Stand for Children. Next week, we'll be back when we will be talking about housing and celebrating the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity's arrival in Indianapolis. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.